This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Rick Britton is live in studio, award-winning author, cartographer. He's online at rickbritton.com. His most recent book is A Monticello Sampler, Essays and Explorations of the Life of Thomas Jefferson. We want to continue our conversation today exploring the top 25 most significant Civil War battles that took place here in Virginia. And it is fantastic timing, I guess we could say.
It's great timing, yeah. The one we've got today, we're all the way up to number 20. So after this, we're only going up to 25. It's taking almost as long as the war to get through all 25 of them, doing them once a week. But this one has a lot of different names, Chaffin's Farm, Fort Harrison, New Market Heights. It was fought between September 28th and September 30th of 1864. And really, I'm going to talk about this briefly. It's a good way to launch into another discussion. But the reason this is on my list, the reason it's important, is because of the participation in this fight of about 10,000 African-American troops that were fighting for the Union cause. The African-American troops were called USCTs, United States Colored Troops, USCTs. And this took place southeast of Richmond on the north side of the James. So the basic idea was that Grant was trying to surround Petersburg. He had gotten his works all the way on the south side of Petersburg. There were Confederate works to the east of Richmond on the north side of the James River. And those were largely defended by few regular troops, lots of militia, second-class militia from the city of Richmond, dismounted cavalry units, not the best units up there defending the eastern perimeter of Richmond. So Grant's idea was, look, we're stretching him around Petersburg. Let's take some troops and move them to the north side of the James River and attack up there and try to stretch him even thinner. And that's the whole idea behind the whole siege of Petersburg and Richmond, is to stretch Lee thinner and thinner and thinner, and eventually he's going to break someplace. And of course, that's what happens in early April of 1865.
Was Petersburg as important or as big of a city at the time? Because now it certainly isn't. But
it's not as big of a city as Richmond, not as important. The thing is, it's the gateway to Richmond, because if Petersburg falls on the Appomattox River about 20 miles to the south of Richmond, there's really no way that Lee can continue to defend Richmond. That, plus the fact that a number of the railroads that go into Richmond go via Petersburg. So if he loses Petersburg, he loses that rail connection to the west and to the south. So those are the important reasons that he has to defend Petersburg.
We're talking with Rick Britton. I've often thought that it was, I've wondered, is it a mistake that Lee put so much stake in defending the actual turf that was Richmond, instead of taking his army and taking the battle away from Richmond,
yeah,
and leading Grant maybe further into the south, further west, instead of sort of constantly being pushed back into Richmond?
No, that's a great question, and Lee didn't want to have to do this, but politically he has to. It's the capital of the Confederacy. He has to try to defend it. Politically, he's tied to the city of Richmond. No, he doesn't want to. And in fact, as the Overland Campaign is progressing, as they're getting closer, he said to one of his other generals, if he gets us into a regular siege, then it's only going to be a matter of time.
I mean, you would have thought at
some
point
understood that, but politically, yeah, he's tied to Richmond.
You would have thought at some point, though, that they would have just said at the last minute, hey, our capital is actually Birmingham, in Alabama.
You have to think about this. You have to think about the morale of the army. The men in the army know that they're defending the capital of the Confederacy, and if all of a sudden you switch the capital or all of a sudden you give up the capital, it affects the morale of the men in the army and the morale in the country, too, the citizens at home, and they're not going to fall for doublespeak like that. No, all of a sudden it's someplace else. Yeah. It's not going to work. So he's tied. Unfortunately, he doesn't want to be, but he's tied to Richmond. So in this move, the attack went against Fort Harrison. It goes by a number of different names, this battle. And about 10,000 colored troops, they were called, United States colored troops, African-American men, under white leaders, of course, helped attack this fort. And they were able to take this fort. And the reason this is so important is that in the entire Civil War, only 16 African-American men were awarded Medals of Honor, Congressional Medals of Honor. 14 out of the 16 were awarded for participation in this battle.
In this just one battle.
In this one battle.
Attacking?
Fort Harrison. Fort Harrison. But it kind of spread out. So that's why there's so many different names to this fight. And the reason I included this is so we can talk more about the African-American participation. Not a lot has been written. More in the past 20 years has been written, and it's still a new area relative to the rest of the study of the Civil War. But all told, between 250 and 300,000 African-Americans served in the United States Army in the Civil War. Now, of course, they don't get into the Army until later in the war because the big push didn't happen until after the Emancipation Proclamation actually went into effect, and that was January 1, 1863. So the war is already almost 2 years old before these men get into the war. Now, of these, let's say a quarter of a million, about 100,000 of those, so what's that, two-fifths of the total, came from either the territories or the South. So think about that. That's a lot of men who have just escaped slavery. All of a sudden, they're serving in the ranks of the United States Army. And as you can imagine, you know, by that time, to a lot of people, it was a war. The Army was fighting a war by that time because Lincoln had turned it into a war for the Army to free the slaves. So here are men fighting for the freedom of the people that they'd left back at home. Now, of all of these, and according to the best authorities on this, about 180 regiments, mostly infantry, but also 7 cavalry regiments, 12 heavy artillery regiments, 1 field artillery regiment, and an engineer regiment, were completely made up of African-American soldiers officered by white troops. We need to remember that. Almost all of the officers, only a few, a handful of African-Americans became commissioned officers. It was very, very rare.
In the Union Army.
In the Union Army. Yeah. And in the Confederate Army, too. And we'll talk about that in
but
just
there weren't any African-American officers in the Confederate Army.
No, there weren't any African-American officers in the Confederate Army. Yeah. Most of these were in the rear echelons, but about 60 of those regiments actually made it to the front and actually made it into combat. So about a third of the African-Americans who served in the Civil War on the Union Army, about a third of them actually made it into combat. And the big question was, were they going to fight? Now, we saw that they actually did fight at the Crater, but they got wasted. That division that got thrown in, the division that had actually been trained to make that breakthrough.
Yeah, we're fish in a barrel.
They get held back, and then they get thrown in, and it became fish in a barrel. Absolutely. Yeah. They were totally wasted. Here at Fort Harrison at Chaffin's Farm, they absolutely proved, and in the result, they were awarded, 14 Congressional Medals of Honor. They actually proved that they would fight, and they would fight as well as white men. But this, on both sides, was a big question throughout the war. Now, in the Confederate Army, there were blacks in the Army. The vast, vast majority of the blacks that were with the Confederate troops were either cooks or teamsters or wagoneers or slaves that had been hired to dig the trenches, to help them build the field works. Nonetheless, they were helping the Confederacy, but it's not as if they have much of a choice. Now we're getting to this this article that recently came out in the Washington Post.
And this is what I meant by good timing, that we would talk about this particular battle and the contributions of African Americans during the Civil War.
Right.
Towards the, on both sides, really, fighting for both sides.
Right, and this is really, really controversial.
Was the article about? It was in the Post this week.
Yeah, the article just came out, and of course there's been a lot of reaction to this. And as it turns out, there is a Virginia history book that has just been issued to the kids in the public schools in Virginia, and it's called Our Virginia, and it's by a woman by the name of Joy Mazoff. It's published by Five Ponds Press up in Connecticut. And as it turns out, we'll talk some more about this. As it turns out, 14 of the books by Five Ponds Press are being taught in the Virginia public school system, and all of them were written by the same lady, Joy Mazoff. In doing the research for the book, she researched stuff on the internet, and without vetting any of this information, as most people realize, the information is full of garbage, lies, half-truths, misrepresentations. You really have to be careful when you pull stuff off the internet. She pulled the following sentence and put it right into the book.
Which is now a textbook in Virginia schools?
It is now a textbook entitled Our Virginia, talking about African Americans and Indians, their participation, Native Americans, in the Civil War. Here's the exact sentence. Thousands of Southern blacks fought in the Confederate ranks, including two black battalions under the command of Stonewall Jackson. There is absolutely no truth to that statement. If anybody out there thinks they have can actually prove that that's true, we know the units that served under Stonewall Jackson. There are rosters of all the armies. There are lists, rosters of all the regiments, all the units that served in the Confederacy. There were not two black battalions under the command of Stonewall Jackson. The reason I'm upset about this, this is an obvious mistake, but what upsets me even more is that somebody who is writing a textbook for public school students in Virginia would pull something off the internet and not have the wherewithal, not have the intelligence to know that she's got to vet whoever has to vet. She has to find more than one reference to something before it goes into a school book. And this was actually reviewed by a committee of content specialists and teachers in Virginia, in the Department of Education in Virginia. And they also didn't have the sense to realize that this is an out-and-out lie. This is not true at all. There are a lot of different accounts, and this is really...
Are they going to pull the book?
I don't know if they're
going to
pull the book. I think they...
Are they circling the wagons and saying, oh, no, we're not going to say we were ever wrong?
The way I feel about it is if you find something that is this wrong in a school book, how many other things are wrong? The book needs to be looked at lot closer.
If you just joined us, we're talking with Rick Britton. I am totally going to sound like a boy born in Atlanta and raised in Virginia here. But what do we do in having a history book written in Connecticut about the South in Virginia schools? I mean, that's been the long tradition that we've seen ever since even before the Civil War, these history books about the South written by Yankees, excuse my French, and they're just full of mistakes. I mean, it's so funny that here in 2010, this was a problem
amazing.
In the 19th
it's
century.
Amazing. But, this is a bigger story. There's been a lot written about this over the past 10 years. It's not historians that are deciding what history is taught in the public schools across the United States. It's these committees that decide what goes into the school books. And it's really...
And you get
really
the politics of the left and the right that weigh in on it, and they end up giving crappy history.
There's really something incredibly broken.
Or lies, even. Just not bad history, it's actual lies.
That system is really broken. We need to do something about that. It's just a travesty. Yeah. It really is.
That's amazing. We saw what they did to Jefferson in Texas, I mean, they just totally took him out.
That's right.
That he was as specifically in a section about significant revolutionary thinkers.
Right.
Completely took him out.
Right. The principal author of the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah.
Right.
And he was a guy that gave us the phrase, the wall of separation between church and state. They don't like that in Texas.
Didn't fit their agenda.
Yeah.
Exactly right. And those are the people who are deciding what our kids learn in school. There's something terribly wrong about
that.
So
this is not true.
It's not true.
And I should say, the article in the Post quotes Irvin Jordan at the University of Virginia, and he's going to be on next week and talk more about this.
Great, I'll have to listen to that.
Because he's done some real research about this as well.
He's written actually a book about Afro-Confederates, about African-Americans in Virginia and their support.
And he knows
this
is not true either, yeah.
Absolutely, he knows this is not true. And all you had to do was do a little bit searching on the internet. It just kills me that somebody could just pull something, a sentence like that off of a website and just plug it right into a Virginia history book.
It's sad. Well, hopefully they'll pull the book. We'll see. There's no telling, though, is there?
I hope so. Here are some of the other books that she's written that are also being taught in the Virginia public school system. Oh, Yuck, The Encyclopedia of Everything Nasty. And Oh, Yikes, History's Grossest Moments. Two of her other real popular titles. So you can tell sort of that she doesn't really specialize in history.
Yeah.
Yeah, and should probably stay away from
amazing.
The topic
Rick
of
Britton, he's online at rickbritton.com. He'll join us again next week, and we'll pick up right where we left off.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.